Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1115. Over at ID10T.com, we have many new things, new designs. There's a Daryl and Dog shirt up that is 100% delightful, just through and through. One of my favorite things we've put up on the site so far. We're putting it on t-shirts, sweatshirts, raglan t-shirts, which are those like three-quarter baseball sleeve shirts. And it was designed by an incredibly talented artist named Matthew Lineham, who is at @mlinehamart on Instagram. So head on over to the exclusive Daryl and Dog shirt at id10t.com and sign up for our email list while you're there, so you can find out about such things, so you don't have to hear about them in the intro of podcasts and whatnot. Let's talk about you, the ID10T community corkboard, like Aaron, who writes, "I just want to share this great card game my friend Gia and I created. Not to be confused with, which is the name of the game, is a fast-paced, semi-strategic game that encourages you to be a know-it-all in front of your friends and family. If you enjoy card games or can name all the members of that one band or have an encyclopedic knowledge of people's names, or if you just know a lot of different names from history, literature, movies, television, please help this game become a reality. We think you'll enjoy it as much as we do." It's on Kickstarter, and the short link is bit.ly/not-confused. So thank you, Aaron. Well done. Events at id10t.com for anyone else who wants to share the thing. This episode is comedian Erica Rhodes, who I met, she did At Midnight a bunch, super funny, super cool and nice, and she has a new comedy special out called La Vie en Rhodes, which was done during the pandemic, actually outside in a kind of a drive-in configuration at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, and that is coming out April 13th on Comedy Dynamics, and it's just so inspiring to see that Erica was out there making comedy during the pandemic. I have not made any comedy during the pandemic, so I'm really impressed and inspired by the comics who have, and also just excited that things are starting to open back up. I might actually have tour dates soon. Erica definitely has tour dates that you can go check out, so look for her. Erica Rhodes, fantastic guest, really great comedian on the ID10T podcast 1115, which we begin right now. Roll the thing!
Initiating ID10T protocol. Hey, Chris.
How's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
We're hanging in there, you know? Right. We are hanging in there. Oh, God, we're so close. We're just like the light at the tunnel. It's just so like, we're just like, it feels like we're just about to hit the lights, you know? Like, that's kind of how we feel over here.
Where are you?
We're in Los Angeles.
Okay.
Where are you?
L.A.
Oh, you're in L.A. too. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just, I mean, listen, we're not ready for indoor dining yet, but we just are starting to feel like, oh my gosh, there could be, I know people are starting to book shows, you know?
And yeah.
I'm not there yet, but it's fun. It's like, it feels good knowing that it's happening.
Are you doing the vaccine thing or what are you?
We are going to, yeah, for sure. But even once that happens, we're still like, we don't have this mindset of like, let's just run around town and go indoors everywhere. You know, like we're going to do it. And it's really just, you know, like a step. But I'll be able to like hug my mom who got vaccinated a couple of weeks ago. And we'll be able to see some friends and, you know, go on a road trip maybe. But we're not going to go crazy. What about you?
Well, I've been crazy because I've already been traveling.
Really? How is it?
I mean, it's fine because like I've done clubs where it's just really small turnouts, you know, Right. And I don't do any meet and greets and I just wasn't that freaked out.
Oh, that's good. That actually is really, that's really encouraging to hear because it's hard for me to even think about that right now. because the last time I did stand up was like February. I think there might have been a February 29th in 2020, but it was the end of February. I was at the Punchline in San Francisco doing meet and greets, you know, giving high fives, taking pictures and stuff. And then like a week later, it was like, don't leave your house. And so I just immediately sort of just shut down to the possibility of stand up. But you say it's like, it feels okay.
Yeah, I mean, I felt pretty safe. Like once I did it a few times, I was like, okay, I'm over the hump of really freaking out. But I also don't have a family I'm worried about, you know, like I'm not living with other people. Right. So I don't feel responsible. Plus, I know a lot of people have said this, but I was convinced I had it last March. Uh-huh. Like, because I got sick twice in a row and I just felt like, okay, I got it over with.
Right. Well, maybe you did. And maybe.
You
know, maybe that was, you know, like helped kind of shield you from just the craziness of everything. I can't imagine, like the people that come to see your shows, they must be super psyched to be out of the house, I would imagine.
Yeah, they're so happy to be there. Like I did shows in Alameda and it was outside. So, that felt safe, but they had not, none of them had been out. They were like, we're just amazed that we're even out. Like I don't even think they heard any comedy. They were just like, thank you for getting us out of the house today.
Great. I mean, that... You know, because listen, you know, it was easy to sort of take all that stuff for granted before and be like, oh, I don't got, what do we have to like put on clothing and go park the car and have to wait in a line? You know? And now people are like, oh my God, let's put on clothes and go get in the car and go, you know, so it's those things that help us to reappreciate just the simple wonders of life, like just going to a show.
Yeah, it does feel nice to perform. I'm not good with downtime.
Right.
No, I'm not good with that.
I mean, it is pretty impressive that, I mean, I am in total awe of the fact that you were able to continue writing, continue performing, shot a special. Honestly, my comedy brain just shut down because when I don't have shows coming up, it's very hard for me to feel motivated. And so everything just sort of like goes into screensaver mode.
Did you do anything online at all, or did you just do your podcast? And yeah,
I didn't. Did you do a lot of like Zoom style shows
in the beginning? And then I got burnt out. I was like, this just takes too much energy. I feel like I'm like shouting into, like, I'm trying to reach them. And so I'm like leaning in and shouting, and it just didn't feel organic. You know,
I thought I had, was concerned that it would feel that way. And I watched a couple that I was like, oh, this is actually, the comics are doing a great job. But then Ron Funches said, well, he goes, you just have to pretend it's like those early open mic days. And I go, oh my God, that's the perfect where you might get a reaction, or maybe there's only a couple people, and you know, but Jackie Cation does them all the time and she's doing great. So I think some people are just really adept at adapting to it. And I'm just a real fuddy-duddy about it. I'm like, I just need to be in a room with people. I feel weird.
Yeah, it's definitely not the same. And there's a delay, so you have to wait. You have to like wait for the laugh to land.
Jackie actually had a good note for me on that, which she was like, you have to pretend. And it is sort of a fun theater of the mind exercise. She's like, just pretend you're in a big theater and you're waiting for the sound to hit the back of the room.
Yes, exactly.
I'll pretend I'm in a big theater instead of in my living room with in their living rooms and their internet connection. What a fun exercise that
is. Pretend it's where you want to be.
Well, I always thought I really questioned like, well, maybe I'm not a real comic because real comics need to be on stage all the time. And honestly, I love performing more than anything, but I'm also fine when I'm not doing it. Like, I don't feel like, oh man, I'm freaking out, I got to get up there. I just feel like, okay, well, I'll just go into like cryostasis for a year and then I'll go back when it's okay.
Well, maybe you're just stable. Like,
that's a positive spin.
Right? You're just emotionally more stable than most of us. Maybe you don't lose your identity, you know? Maybe you don't tie your identity to what you do as much as some people.
You know, I know I used to. And then as I got older, I started to try to separate from a little bit, because someone said something to me once that I found very impactful. It was something like, you are not your career, or it's something like your career is just a thing you do. It's not who you are. And I was like, oh my, which is very related to like, your thoughts are not who you are. Oh my God, what? You know, it's all that kind of mindfulness stuff where you're like, oh, but my thoughts have been talking to me my whole life. So they're just, that's a separate, yeah. So your career is not, no, you can just, you know, oh my God, what? You know, I mean, it was kind of life changing, but then also I feel like in a way I was like, oh man, is my work going to suffer now? Because I feel better about myself.
No, I think you'll just live longer.
I just don't know. I do miss it though.
I think it's normal to take breaks, right? I mean, when you've been doing it a long time, you don't need to have that hustle mentality.
I think you're right. I do, because I think, tell me if you've had this experience too, where you know, there's like a comic that you watched a ton of, and then as that comic got older, you just didn't see him that much anymore. And I think sometimes when comics hit their like 50s, 60s, whatever, it's just there's like a hunger that you have to perform, because it's performing. Because my wife says, like, do you miss it? And I go, well, I miss the performing, but I don't miss all of the getting on planes, having to futz to get my luggage, you know, getting up at 7 o'clock to do morning radio, get, you know, doing five shows, doing, you know. So there's a, you know, like making sure that I'm
like the work part.
Yeah, exactly. I want the fun part. Yeah. Could you post more, because your show's, oh God, okay. You know, the actual performing I love, but I realize like everything around it's kind of a drag.
It's the traveling sucks. I almost had a panic attack on my way home. I was in Utah last weekend. Yeah. And it's already crazy at the airport, and they redid the Utah airport. So now you have to walk like 3 miles to the gate. So we walk 3 miles. Then they send us down back the stairs. We went up 3 flights already. Now we go back down. Then they send us onto a shuttle, and the shuttle goes out to the plane, and we're all stuck on the shuttle for like 25 minutes with no air and the sun beating down on us. And I was like, can we please open the door?
Are these COVID protocols, or is it just like, what
I don't know.
Do you do with?
Then they're like, oh, well, we're going to have the middle seat empty. Well, that means nothing if you put us boxed into a shuttle for 30 minutes together with no air circulation.
That reminds me a bit of that game where you do I think it was called, like, where you make.
Oh my God, that just brought back so many memories, this game. What game is that?
But it was like you'd fold the paper up, and then you'd put your
hands
in it and do the, you know, forward side, and then you'd open up a thing.
Oh my God, that game. I was obsessed with that game when I was a kid.
I can't remember what it was called, but.
You would make the paper things, and then, yeah, you would say which it was like a topic, or you choose something.
Yeah. And then
you would go
back and forth. And then an old friend of mine had a joke about it where you'd go through like 9 steps and then you'd open up the last thing and it would be like, fuck you. You know? So you'd go, and that to me felt like what you just described, where it's like, they put you through all these things, and I'm surprised that some date agent didn't just come out and flip everyone off and go, okay, fuck you guys. And then they just leave you on the tarmac, and then that's it. You know?
Yeah, basically that's what it felt like. It was horrible. So yeah, you're not missing out with the travel.
Were you at Wise Guys?
Yeah.
That's a fun club.
I love it. It's one of my favorite clubs.
There was one that was just out of the center of town a little bit. And it was like, the club was really kind of like a conference room. But then the last time I was there a few years ago, it was like a real, and that room was fun too. But this room was like a nice little dinner theater club. Really,
which
really
one cool. Do you do when you do it? Have you done Ogden?
I don't think I've done Ogden. I did the one that's like kind of more in the center of town.
Okay, the downtown one?
I guess so, yeah. I guess
okay.
The downtown one. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, but I miss that club, and I miss... What are your favorite clubs? I miss... Comedy Works in Denver, Acme in Minneapolis. I think you maybe did your last album at Helium, I'm guessing.
Yes, I love Helium.
Helium's great.
Yeah. I had done one show there when I decided to do my album there. I had one good show and I was like, that's it. I'm doing my album there. And then I was like, wait, that might have been just a lucky night. But it worked out. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, Erica, there's so many things that I want to talk to you about because I read, is it cello? Do you play cello?
I do. I have it right over there.
And your mom was a violinist.
Yes.
I am so, and then of course we'll talk about comedy, but I, have you been playing cello your entire life?
I have, but I have to say I take very long breaks now.
But you've, but when you start, when you're a kid, it's always just in your muscle memory, right?
That's true. Yeah.
I'm so jealous of people who started an instrument when they were young because I started as a very grown adult and I find it thoroughly, I love it, but it's very frustrating.
How many, do you play more than one instrument? I forget.
I play guitar and piano.
You don't play trumpet, do you?
No, but that would be great.
Why did I think you... Okay, so one time I saw you at the Meltdown. Do you have a trumpet joke? No.
I don't think so.
Okay, you must have been talking about guitar then.
Or I mean, you know, who knows? Because that that was such a fun, like, loose room that there could have been, like, a trumpet just sitting... Like, there could have been a trumpet prop, you know?
I don't know why I'm thinking you said something about trumpet at some point, but it might have just been that you were talking about an instrument.
Maybe I've been wasting my time on the two wrong instruments. And trumpet, you know, how many stand-up trumpetists are there? Trumpeteer? Trumpetists.
Actually, that's a really... Trumpists?
No. Trumpeteer. I like trumpeteer.
This is going to be the podcast where we talk about Trump the most, but it's not about Trump.
It's about trumpets. No, it's about literal trumpets.
Yeah, we're talking about the trumpet.
Yeah, I support trumpets. I don't, what's the confusion? I don't know what's hard about that. Cellos, though, are they fretless?
Yes, so it's just the bridge and the strings.
That to me is a mind-blowing, like I can't even fully wrap my mind around it because without having really struggled through guitar the last 2.5 years, and that's even with frets, like so much of the map of the guitar is based on the fretboard and getting around and all the patterns. So can you please explain to me how a fretless instrument works?
Well, so you learn, like when you're little, you learn where the first note is, like... So you learn the scale and it's muscle memory. So you just kind of, so they'll put stickers on when you first start.
Okay.
To remember. And then it's muscle memory and your ear.
Okay.
So you learn by ear.
Oh my God.
That's like all the, yeah. So and the daunting. Separation of your fingers.
And did you, when you started, did you feel like that this was a potential career path or was it just... Well, my mom's a violinist, so I'm going to take cello and who knows.
Yeah, I was a music major in college. So I was a cello major at Boston University for a year.
Yeah.
And then I dropped out.
There's nothing like academic study to take the real fun out of playing an instrument.
Well, the problem is that I wasn't good at music theory. I was very bad. So I learned everything by ear. So I would sit in the back of orchestra until I learned it. And I would sort of airplay, like I would kind of fake playing.
Yeah.
And that's not fun, you know, to like sit there not knowing how to play for the first couple weeks. And then I'd finally learn it by ear and then I could play it. But music theory was so hard for me.
And is it when you're a cello player, because at least, you know, with guitar, even piano, you might say, hey, I could be a solo player. Like you could play guitar by yourself or you could play piano by yourself. Is there a, can you play, is this a dumb question? Can you play cello as a solo artist, or do you really just kind of need to find your way into an ensemble?
Yeah, that's not a dumb question. It's actually, I think it's very hard to be a soloist with any classical instrument. It's so competitive. And then there aren't that many pieces. Like, you could play Bach cello suites alone. Yeah. And that's what I tend to play alone. But everything else, you know, you either need a piano or an orchestra. Even concertos, you have an orchestra behind you.
Right. So. It was just the 300th anniversary of the Brandenburg Concertos. And I was reading an article about Bach that said this. I mean, you know, when I listen to classical music, I just think, oh, it's so ethereal and lovely. You know, I don't ever think about, well, what were the composers trying to say, you know?
Right.
Because now when we want to say something, we just say it, you know? But then I was reading this article about how Bach specifically would put instruments to play together that weren't considered, that people didn't think should play together, like the violin, which was very well regarded, and the viola, which was not well regarded. He would play them together as sort of a, if I'm reading this correctly, as a rebellion to make a statement about class struggle, to say like everything should be equal. And so he would put these instruments together. And I was like, holy shit. I just never.
That's interesting. I didn't know that either.
Yeah. I'll see if I can find the article and share with you, because it sort of talks. And also that Bach didn't, I don't think he died thinking he was a particularly successful art composer. Like there were instances of him, like, you know, trying to get work and submitting these Brandenburg concertos to like the prince of the area to be like, hey, I'd like to be your court composer. And the guy just never responded.
Oh no. I thought that they just knew they were successful if they had it played at all. Like if they had their music played live at all, but I guess not.
What do you like about the Bach pieces?
Oh gosh, that's a hard thing to articulate. I mean, they're like some of the best pieces on cello, you know. They're just, gosh, I don't know how to explain it, but I guess it is because you can play it alone and it feels like you don't need the support of another instrument, and they're very lyrical and romantic.
Did you ever, and this also might be a dumb question, but did you ever consider incorporating a cello into your act at all? Or is that...
Everybody asks me that, and I just have anxiety about that because, A, I don't want to be known as the cello girl, you know? Like, I don't want to be like, oh, she's the cello girl. And then I have to, like, and the other thing is, like, I hate how, like, you have to drag it everywhere. You know, you have to drag it. I mean, I'd have to buy, you know, a separate ticket for it.
And
yeah, because it's such an expensive instrument. You can't just put it with luggage. Like, you'd have to buy a ticket and like.
Oh yeah. I've seen how guitars get handled. Like, I've seen like guitar cases get chucked up onto the thing. And like, I hope that was a hard shell case.
Yeah, and guitars are much less expensive. Like a cello is super expensive. So you just can't mess around.
And there's no, I mean, there probably are like inexpensive road cellos, but they probably just don't sound as great.
Yeah, they don't sound good at all.
2021 is looking up, which means there should be plenty of new opportunities for you to grow your business. Whether you're shifting business hours or hiring more remote employees, one thing that remains unchanged is the importance of having the right people on your team. When you're ready to make that next hire, LinkedIn Jobs can help by matching your role with qualified candidates so that you can find the right person quickly. And to lend a helping hand, your first job post is free. LinkedIn is an active community of professionals with more than 30 million members in the UK. And now you can do this all from your mobile device, no matter where the day takes you. That's how LinkedIn Jobs can help you hire the right person faster. When your business is ready to make that next hire, find the right person with LinkedIn Jobs. And now you can post a job for free. Just visit linkedin.com/reach. Again, that's linkedin.com/reach to post a job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Do you feel like it's important for you to have something that's just separate from work that's for you, for just your own enjoyment, rather than like trying to figure out how to monetize something?
Yeah, I think that's how I feel about cello. I mean, it's kind of there when I want to pick it up, but I don't feel the need to do it for a purpose.
Yeah.
It's kind of just nice.
So then how did you, so when you left Boston University as a cello player, were you already doing stand-up at that point, or did you, no?
No, I'm a late bloomer to stand-up. Like I did acting school first. So I went to the Atlantic Theater Conservatory in New York, and I studied acting. And then when I moved to LA, I was still not doing stand-up. So it took me a lot of failing as an actress to finally decide to do stand-up.
But do you find it, stand-up is really empowering, because it's hard to just go act, but you can just go do stand-up.
That's why, well, that was the main reason I started, because I was like, I can't wait for someone to give me the opportunity to perform. Like, I need an outlet creatively, otherwise I go nuts. So I just felt like I had to figure out my own way. And I was like, I'm not doing theater in LA. That's not happening.
Right. I know there is theater in LA, but it's not like, I don't know how much, well, especially unfortunately now, with just everything that's gone on in the last year. But yeah, I tend to think that when people go, I'm going to go do theater, they don't go Los Angeles.
Right. I actually did try theater here at one point, and it was a terrible experience. So I was I'm never doing theater here again. But this is funny. One time my mom told me, like, this was recent, like a couple years ago. She's like, because she hates LA, so she like never visits. And she's like, if you do something big, I'll come out there. And I was like big as in what? Like, what do you mean big? And she goes, like a play.
I mean, how is that?
I don't do plays.
You could just tell her that your stand-up show is a play. It's a play where I play myself, and my character talks about you a little bit. So you were studying conservatory in New York, and then what was that catalyst for you that said, I'm going to go do an open mic, or I'm going to, were there exercises that you were doing at conservatory that were stand-up adjacent, or like, what was the thing that kind of pushed you in that direction?
Are you saying when I did theater, how did that go to stand-up, or?
Yeah. Like what helped you? Cause I'm always interested to hear everyone's kind of stand-up journey, because comedy is just one of those things where a lot of people, you know, we grow up and in our schools and in our towns or whatever, we feel, oh, it's weird. I don't fully like vibe with everyone else here. And then you start to get older and you meet other comics, and then you realize like, oh, comedy's just a thing. And other people think in this kind of weird roundabout way, and I'm not weird, but these are the people that I connect with. And so I do feel like we are sort of called to it in a weird way. Did you feel that way at all?
It's funny, because I felt like I got a lot of clues that it was what I was supposed to do before I caught on. Yeah. Triggered my memory, because I remember I auditioned for Juilliard Acting School.
Wow.
And auditioned. I didn't get in. And I overheard this actress girl talking about her process before the audition. She's like, yeah, I just want to be myself and like be open and like just like really be vulnerable. And like the other girl was like, yeah, I totally know what you mean. Like, wow, like that's so amazing. I'm just like listening to these people. And this guy comes in with a cello. He was like in the orchestra. And he just goes, to be or not to be, and just made fun of everybody. And I was like, that's my people. Those are my people. And so I got confused, because I thought, oh, it's a musician I like, right? He had a cello, so I should do music. And then I realized, oh, no, it's funny. Funny is what I like.
Right.
You know, it's not the musicians happen to be really funny.
So. Yeah, a lot of musicians are. And I feel like a lot of comedians kind of want to be musicians, but a lot of musicians kind of want to be comedians at the same time.
Totally. That is like completely true.
I'm so fascinated by the, so they sent me, full disclosure, I didn't get sent the new special until yesterday. So
oh,
I
have not,
unfortunately, had a chance to watch it yet. So I 1,000 times apologize. I will watch it. But I did, when we booked you for the podcast, I listened to Sad Lemon, which was great. I mean, like, again, Portland, Helium, you know, like the set was great. And you had one of those jokes in there that I heard and I was like, oh my God, it was one of those jokes. Like I wish I had written, which was spoiler for anyone who hasn't heard the album yet. I was sober for 15 years and then I turned 16. I was like, God damn it. That joke was, it was just there. It was just there the whole time. So hats off.
Oh, thanks. That's such an old joke. I like never do it anymore.
Oh, it's a great joke.
Oh, thanks.
So is Levion Rhodes, is it a new set or is it some of that set or because the last album just came out in 2019.
Yeah, it's it still has some of those jokes. But then I think it's about half and half.
And you did it I know you did it at the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
I have a lot of questions about the outdoor comedy with people in cars, like drive-in style. Was it fun or did you kind of have to like readjust to the vibe of it?
Well, it was a little bit strange because not everybody was mic'd. So you could only hear about 20 cars mic'd, okay. But you could hear them. But it was a little bit, I had to adjust because sometimes I would think a joke would bomb, you know, but then suddenly there'd be the like honking from the back. And then it would be like a honking applause break. So it was a little confusing because you couldn't really read like if something worked or not. You just had to trust that it would work eventually, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's such an interesting dynamic because it in theory like makes sense. Well, if people, you know, like they pull up and they're outside, if you can see them and you can hear them, it's a comedy show. Like there's no, but I just could never, I knew people who did some of the drive-in shows and they were like, oh, it's such an interesting dynamic. The horn honking to me is hilarious.
Yeah. Cause you're used to having bad negative connotations with honking. But then by the end of the set, I'm like, I love honking. I want more honking.
It's not often that people are laying on their horn. I like this thing. Yeah. I really like this. You are great. Great.
Yeah, it's really weird. So, yeah.
And when did you shoot it?
July.
Oh, wow. That was really early on with everything. You didn't waste any time.
Well, yeah, because we were initially supposed to do it in April as part of Tribeca. It was going to be part of Tribeca. And the funny part, the joke on me part, is that when they first brought it to me, I looked at the venue we were going to do the special in, you know, in New York. Yeah. And I told my manager, I was like, I don't know, the ceilings look a little high.
So the good news is we've taken out the ceiling completely.
Now the ceiling is the sky. Is that okay for you? Okay.
Hi. Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. Sorry for the notes.
Yes. Sorry.
You're so right though. I like I think people who don't really understand like all of the elements that really go into a comedy show, like what really make a comedy show work. And you're so right. Like tall ceilings are tough. They're really
tough.
You really need like kind of a low ceiling to sort of just, so all the jokes can just sort of skim off the ceiling, just like create a little atmosphere above people, but you don't want it to be like out in space.
That's what's great about that Ogden Club, the Wise Guys Ogden Club. The ceiling is pretty low.
Yeah.
And same with Acme Comedy Club. They're pretty low ceiling.
Yeah. I often wonder if it has something to do with the fact that comedy should feel a little like a speakeasy in a way, like, oh, it's kind of naughty. What are we, you know, Like, so sometimes when clubs are too nice, it can be a little tough because I think that's why Meltdown worked, because it was just in the back of a comic book store. Like, you know, there were big posts in the middle of the room. The ceilings were super low. Like, it shouldn't have. It was almost like, oh, we snuck into this back room and now we're telling jokes. And
yeah, it feels more intimate. Like, you feel like you're sharing an experience.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And that can dissipate when you have like a really tall, but do you feel good about, like, when did you do the show one time or two times, or how did?
Well, we did it once. And so that was tough, you know, because there are a few things I will admit I wish I did differently, but I'm sure that's normal.
Totally
You know, certain things I think I wouldn't have done had it not been a drive-in. I just, a few little weird habits crept in where I was like, well, why did I say that? Or why did I do that? So.
I don't know. I think it's a really cool thing because it will always be a time capsule of this moment.
Yeah, that's true.
And I don't think a lot of other, I don't know how many other people did specials that way, but I can't imagine it was, if anyone else, that it was that many. Like, it's going to be a real special thing.
Yeah, that makes me feel better.
And also, again, I'm so impressed. Because when I heard that, when your name came in to do the show and they said, oh, she did this, I was like, oh my God, I would love to have her on. Cause you did At Midnight a couple times.
Yeah, I did it a bunch of times.
And
that was a big deal for me, by the way. So I should thank you. Yeah.
Well, no, you were great on the show. It was great. And it really, your style worked really well in that environment too. Like, just the, you know, like quick jokes, you know, like really punch. It was great. You were great on the show.
Oh, thanks. Well, so are you. I still get people who, after shows, being like, I found you from At Midnight.
I, when people say like, I'm torn about it because when they go, oh, I miss it. You know, I wish it would, you know, I wish there was a way to do it again. And I always sort of feel like maybe that's good because you never want people to be like, is that still on? You know what I mean? Like, it's nice when people, when you sort of get to kind of wrap something up and people think of it fondly and not like, oh God, this show is, it's still on, you know?
Well, also you also caught a wave, you know, in the beginning of Twitter,
right?
Where it's like, it was a novelty to sort of have that audience engagement like that.
Right.
You know, and now it's a little bit like everyone, Twitter's just a little bit crazy. I don't think it would be the same.
I tell you though, I love comedy so much.
Yeah.
That I miss just being around comics and getting to sort of riff with really, you know, funny people and getting to discover comedians that I wasn't as familiar with before and playing around with comedians that I look up to. I mean, it just, you know, do you ever think about like pitching a panel show, or would you want to host a panel show?
I don't think I'd be very good at it. I was in awe of you. Like, you could just, you have one of those personalities where you can just keep things going. And I am not that type. Like, I'm like, I get distracted. I'm not organized in my brain. So hosting is hard for me. Like, even hosting normal shows has always been hard.
It is a weird, I don't know. It is a weird muscle, I guess, but I don't know. I really honestly think, you know, maybe it's something just to pitch out there, you know, because I think to me, panel shows should be everywhere. Like, England has a shit ton of panel shows and there are almost none in the States. And it feels like there's a million channels. Why are there not more panel shows? Like, it's a great way for comedians to not have to burn through their material. You know, they're fun to do. People seem to enjoy them. So I don't know. Maybe it's something to pitch out there that you'd consider at some point, like coming up with a show if that ever interested you.
Yeah, maybe. Are you thinking of doing another one?
I always think of doing another one, but it's always just trying to figure out like what's the hook of it? Like, the At Midnight had a really strong hook because of what
really good hook. Yeah, really good.
And so I think for the longest time, like, Chelsea Lately worked really well, but then there was this like everyone tried to copy that show and they're like, oh, you just put a bunch of funny people around a table and then magic happens. And it's like, well, it needs more of a structure than that. And so it's really, and they were able to do it well on that show. And I loved doing that show, but there's more to it than just like squish a bunch of funny people together and watch the magic. So it, to me, it just always comes down to like, well, what's the idea? Like, what's the reason? Having a fake game show was a blast because it was a great reason to get everyone together. But, you know, now I just, I'm like, what's the thing that gets all the comics there that justifies its existence?
Right.
Then I don't know. Do you, do you audition for acting stuff still?
I do still audition once in a while when it's something like I would really want to do. But I'm more interested in sort of pitching my own show. I've been pitching like my own stuff.
Yeah.
And so I'm more interested in sort of writing, creating my own thing.
Yep. Yeah. I realized that when you audition for stuff, every other actor, you know, it is that sort of frustrating thing of like, there's no way to know how or when I'm going to get picked for something. And then there's that thing where you audition and then you don't get it. And then you feel bad, even though you kind of didn't want it to begin with. And it just,
right.
It's just that kind of weird frustration.
Yeah. It's sort of a hamster wheel thing.
It's a total hamster wheel, and some people are really, really good at it. And I was never a great auditioner.
No, me neither. Not really my thing.
So are you working on a scripted, like a scripted half hour or a scripted hour?
Yeah. I wrote a pilot with a friend and we took it out, but we never took it out to networks. So we wanted to try to take it out to networks.
Yeah.
And that was a little bit more of like, a higher concept thing, kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And then I was working on something with a writer and we were taking that out too, but I didn't really write it as much. So my goal is to write my own thing.
Yeah.
But I tried like one draft and my manager was like, that was not very good. So, but I think it's because I'm not used to writing scripts. It's just different than, you know, stand up.
Yeah.
So I can write shorts. I've written a couple of short films and stuff, but I haven't written like a full thing yet.
That part of the writing process is a real different skill set. I completely agree. I've tried to do it before and I've been lucky enough to collaborate with people who are much smarter than I am. And I don't think I could have done it without that, because that three act structure, like the flow of like, set up this scene and then some jokey jokes and then it's got to go somewhere and set up the next scene and then jokey jokes and then too many jokey jokes or not enough or it ends weird.
Right. Yeah. It is a structure thing. So maybe I just need to accept collaborating with people to write something.
I guess I falsely assume that because everyone has streaming services now, like all the big companies have streamers, it's like, why the fuck doesn't everyone just get a show? Like, there's,
I know,
it's not like you're competing for a Thursday at 8 p.m. slot. There's infinite bandwidth on your streaming service. Why not just give every comedian a show?
What do you think of this NFT stuff? Like,
I don't know yet. I mean, it definitely feels like a bubble. But I do believe that it will settle into a place, because the thing that I really am drawn to about it is that, you know, if you buy a piece of art, that art can change hands, but the original artist doesn't affect that, you know, like they don't get paid every time someone else. So if people are trading something on the chain of a piece of art, in theory, I guess my understanding is that the original artist will get a cut of that sale as it changes hands. And so I find that really interesting. And also that it's a digital asset can be so many different types of media that I think people will get creative. I think there'll be an initial land rush at first of like, you know, oh, I photocopied my nostrils and I sold it for 10 grand, but I don't know how, you know, like I feel like it'll start. Remember how like when VR was big a handful of years ago and everyone was like, everything's going to be in VR. And it's like, well, some things work in VR, but not all things work in VR.
True. So
I think it could be like that. I don't know. What do you think?
No, I just don't know much about it. I just keep seeing people talking about it. And I'm like, I don't understand. Like, are comics going to start doing that? Like, are they going to start selling specials as an NFT?
Or moments, you know, like, I think it's one of those things where it really appeals to the collectors. And it was, I'm not a sports person, but I understand this idea as a collector, as you see all this Disney stuff that's behind me. You know, like, there's a big market right now for diehard sports fans, like, buying NBA moments. Oh, that, you know, like, I bought the moment where, and, you know, and some people go, well, that's dumb. You don't, you're not owning a physical thing. And it's like, yeah, but it's really, isn't it kind of like with any sort of art where it's the bragging right of like, I own that thing, where that person says, like, I bought that moment, and they can't do anything with it other than they have the satisfaction of knowing that they kind of own that piece of history in a way. And so with stand-ups, I think it could be the kind of thing where, you know, like, there might be like NFT carve-outs and contracts now. Like, so when you shoot a special, maybe you have the right for a certain number of your own NFT moments that you can sell, or companies will try to jump on that. So like CBS Viacom is like, we're going to own a handful of NFT rights to sell, and it might just be like another revenue stream. But I honestly don't know. I mean, is that, do you think that's something that you are going to look into or get involved with?
I mean, I wasn't really thinking about it, but I just keep seeing it everywhere, you know, so it just sort of sparked my curiosity. I was like, it could be fun to do something just as that.
Right.
Just as an experiment, but I still don't understand what it is. So I guess I'd have to figure out what it is first.
Okay, this I'm really interested to hear your take on. What are your thoughts on TikTok? And I know I sound like an old person when I say this. I feel 100. As a comedian, I feel like it's a performance platform. I should be on it. Most of my friends are posting shit all the time. And yet, like, I just don't know if I have the emotional energy for a whole nother platform.
I just can't get into it. And everybody tells me, like, you need to be on TikTok. You need to be on TikTok. And I just can't gather the strength to do it.
It does feel like when you start thinking about setting up something and planning stuff or whatever, it's like, well, now that's a job.
Yes. And I just don't really understand the platform in general. Like, I don't get the point of it.
Okay, so I felt the same way when it first launched, because it was a lot of just people like lip syncing and you know, and then I saw an article that very succinctly kind of basically said, you know, Instagram, because I said, well, like, why is it different than stories? Instagram is really kind of a lifestyle blog, and TikTok is a performance platform. And I was like, that's it. So it makes sense from that point of view, but I just, you know, I also just feel so exhausted by how we're like that.
Your expression right now is exactly how it makes me feel. Like, just putting your hand, like,
like, do I have the emotional energy to be judged by, like, for another fake metric to help me feel, you know, like, whether or not I should be performing or not? Like, I just don't know.
No, I don't. I've opted out. I don't feel bad about it. You know, I'm putting my energy to other things. I just don't care.
You know, there are people who go like, well, you know, you just don't pay any attention. You just, like, you put it up if you like it. And then whatever, like, if people watch it, they watch it. If they don't, they don't. And it's like, yeah. But even people who say that, I'm sure they look and go, oh, this one only got like 1,000 likes, but then the other one got like 100,000. So what's the difference? And what do I need to start doing more impressions? Like, the second I start feeling like, do I need to start doing more impressions? I'm like, okay, you're being ruined by, like, don't, let it go.
I think there comes a point where you just have to say, what do I actually like doing?
Yeah.
And not what am I supposed to be doing, or what do I need to be doing, or what's someone else doing?
Well, then I would reintroduce back to you what you said to me earlier is, you might just be very healthy. You might be too sick, but you might be too healthy to do TikTok.
That's a good callback, Chris.
I mean, if we are actually at the point where we can say, like, you know, just do stuff because you like it. And even honestly, I do wonder, because I find it very interesting. Like, I think the intuitive, like, people would intuitively think, like, well, if someone has a big audience on one platform, they have a big audience everywhere. But I think what we're learning is that the platforms are very platform specific. Like, people who have big YouTube followings, those people don't always follow them to Instagram, who don't always follow them to TV, who don't always, like, sometimes they do. But if you have a big following on TikTok, does that mean that, you know, 10,000 people are going to show up at your comedy show? And I don't think so, but I don't know.
I don't think so either. I don't even know about Twitter, because I have a huge Twitter following, but they don't always show up.
Yeah, I think it's a lot different. It's a lot, you know, like, when you're just looking at something on your phone, which is wherever you happen to be, is a lot different than, you know, exerting the energy to trade in money to physically go to a place at a specified time and sit and be in an audience. It just, those things, because I think in the early days of Twitter, everyone assumed, like, oh my God, if you have, you know, a lot of followers, you know, even if 1% of your followers, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh, but it doesn't really work that way. Like, it's a digital platform that people have in their pocket, basically.
Right. I don't see it translating. And I think it doesn't, even TikTok to television doesn't always seem to quite translate.
Yeah, because it's the medium itself they're sort of like, every platform has a different dialect and a different sort of communal language that isn't, like, you can't, like, a TikTok, like, doing a TikTok bit on television is a little odd, because it's not, the medium isn't right for that. It has its own language and its own, and TikTok is its kind of its own thing. So from that standpoint, I kind of think about, if I have limited energy, what's going to get people to come out to shows? And I'm not convinced that TikTok is going to do that. I guess you're right. If it's fun for you, do it. And if it seems like a chore, then don't do it.
Right. Like, if you'd rather do your podcast. I don't even have a podcast. So, like, I'm ancient history.
You're the last holdout.
Yeah, I'm the last.
Hey, come on. What are you waiting for? Everyone's got a podcast. You gotta,
I started writing blogs because I'm so old school. I'm like, I'm going to go back to the first content.
That's smart. It's going to come back. That's so smart, Erica, because I'm telling you, people are going to be like, God, I miss blogs. You know, like, I just, this, all this video shit, I just want to sit and read, you know, like, you actually might be onto something.
Well, I figure some people, you can either keep trying to be ahead of the trends, or you can just go all the way back.
But all the way back is retro. And, you know, yeah, cassettes went away for a long time and now they're kind of back.
Wait, what did?
Cassettes.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to be a cassette comedian.
You should only release your next special on cassette, and that's it.
That would be funny.
I mean, I was in a very healthy way jealous of Gaffigan, because he started his email list in, like, I mean, I want to say like 2002, or it was like some ridiculous long time ago, where when he was just doing clubs, he'd pass out a sign up sheet. He started collecting emails. He never stopped. And now literally the guy can sell out huge venues just off his email list. And I'm like, fuck, I was so busy chasing every new, like, Friendster, MySpace, Facebook, Twitter, you know, that I should have just stuck with the fucking original. And then, you know, I'd have like 18 years of an email list.
Man, I've had club owners from the beginning say collect emails, and I never listened. And it's, yeah, that is the smartest thing. Everybody gets emails.
Yeah. Yeah. What way are you finding is getting, like, how are you, how are you reaching audiences the most for, is it frequency of touring along with Twitter, along with certain amounts of press? Like, what do you, how are you marketing the shows?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely notice in different venues, it feels like I have different turnouts, you know, because Wise Guys, I did a dry bar special.
Yeah.
And that seems to really help there. So I have good turnouts there, but other places I don't have great turnouts.
It's hard to know sometimes because it feels like even as vocal as you can be on social media about a show, have you noticed that no matter what city you're in, you could be talking about a show leading up to it a million times, and then you leave that city and the next week someone's like, when are you going to come to Denver? And you're like, I was just...
I know. It's like they don't pay attention. Nobody pays attention to your posts.
Well, there's just so many now. Like, it's just all, it's just so much.
I think you're right. I think the email thing is the main thing.
Yeah.
I should be sending out emails telling people where I am.
Yeah, I do think about those, you know, in the time really kind of before the internet, it's like, oh, you'd go on Johnny Carson once and then all of a sudden all your rooms would be full. And you're like, ah,
there is. By the way, I spoke to a 25-year-old who said she didn't really know who Johnny Carson was.
Oh, I totally get that because he's been off the air longer than she's been alive.
But like, how do you not know who he is?
Because he left in like 92 or something. So he's Johnny Carson's time off the air is now a grown ass adult. It's a 28-year-old, you know, he's about to round 30, you know.
Isn't it crazy to think that people chase fame so much, but fame barely lasts at all?
You're absolutely right. And we are in a time now where everyone, like the fact that people refer to themselves as brands, it's like, well, people have just become mini corporations and fame is like a part of the economy of it. But yeah, it doesn't give you anything lasting and it's not entirely real. So it really is just about feeling like a momentary sense of attention. But that's also a hamster wheel because that, I think once people are on that, it's like there's never enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I know it sounds kind of like idealistic, but I really do think if people could just focus on doing the things they actually like doing, it would make people happier.
I could not agree with you more. And I know that that's difficult to implement sometimes, especially because we work in a business where we to a degree need the attention of people because we're comedians and also we need people to show up, but it's just how, you know, finding that balance between getting enough so that you can perform, but not so much that it becomes like obsessive or addictive or unhealthy, you know?
How much time would you say you spend on social media a day?
I mean, not as much. Like, I don't know. In the last few months, I haven't really felt like posting anything. I'm just sort of like, who cares? You know what I did? Like, I just feel like, who cares? You know, like no one cares what I did, you know, the world, you know, like,
I had a friend who wrote on Twitter at one point, like, I'm back. And I was like, nobody noticed you were gone. Like, you don't have to say I'm back.
I just feel like I'm doing the world a favor by posting less because there's just so many posts and there's just so much to keep up on. And I just sort of feel like, you know, and then I watched that documentary on Netflix, but I can't, the social, I can't remember what it's called.
Oh yeah. The social experiment.
I think so. Yeah. And it's basically the stuff that we already knew, which is like, well, everything is commodified by someone in some way. And so it's all just designed to keep you on there and turn everything that you think is a meaningful emotion into a way to sell a banner ad or market something at you. And so, you know, so I don't know. I mean, I'll sort of scroll through because I, you know, like I like to see what other people are up to. And I follow a lot of like house restoration accounts and piano and guitar accounts and stuff. And so I feel like I'm exposed to a lot of, I feel like I'm directing the algorithm, like, just show me this shit, you know? What do you follow mostly?
Probably mostly comedian type people, but then sometimes I'll get into psychology.
Yeah.
Like I'm really into psychology right now. So like I'll follow people like that.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I was trying to turn it into a bit and it just, I could never give it the legs that it needed to really be funny as more of just like a, I think, a friend of mine and I used to refer to those bits as the club name was Charlie Good Points. Or I was like, oh, that's a good point. But it's not.
Oh, funny. That's good. I think I have a bunch of those. Yeah.
Charlie Good Points.
And Charlie Good Points.
The point being that, you know, someday are we going to look at this period of time in social media the way that we look at like cigarettes or like, you know, like in the 30s, the 40s, 50s, everyone smoked. But now we look back and go, oh my God, they smoked on planes. And that someday that we'll look back at social media and be like, everything that most things that aren't healthy started as like a well-intentioned, like maybe it was good for you. Like how heroin used to be in cough syrup and cocaine was in soda. And then they were like, oh no, that's bad. And so will that also be the same with social media? And so when you say you're looking at psychology, are you studying sort of like what some of the effects might be? Do we even know at this point?
Oh no, that was just to see why I was dating so many narcissists. You'll give me too much credit.
I know there was a really great bit in your thing about we both need to love you less, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's a great joke. It's a really great joke.
Thanks.
Have you been I know you've been doing a lot of stuff. Do you feel like your writing has been thriving in this last year? Are you inspired a lot or how have you?
Well, it's been tough because I think, you know, because we haven't been experiencing a lot with other people, like I think I generated most of my material from other people, right. You know, just weird interactions with human nature. Yeah. And so without that, I have a lot of material that's like, I was watching this or I watched that. I went to the grocery store again, you know.
Yeah, I really was thinking about, because the thing, when I listened to Sad Lemon, I hadn't listened to like a club in a really long time. And it just, I had that feeling of like, oh my God, I miss this so much. Like I really do. Like you can kind of hear, you know, like the crowd and some glasses clinking, like just the vibe of the club. It really made me miss it. Like, oh, that's a thing that I used.
Yeah, to like the sound. So it is true. There's nothing real. There's nothing like it. I think that's maybe why we just don't feel great about social media because we know there's nothing that captures the essence of what we do, like a live show.
Yeah, and the getting to meet other comedians or meet local comedians and sort of like discover new people and just all feel like. That communal aspect, it's so tempting to never leave your house because we don't really, you know, like it's, there are a lot of things that are designed to keep us at home, you know? And then we couldn't leave. But
yeah.
So, like the communal aspect of it is so important.
Yeah. Like this weekend when I was at Wise Guys, I just sat with the openers for like 2 hours after the show, just talking about jokes, you know?
Oh, that's great.
It just felt so good to just talk shop.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you pull out notebooks and go over jokes or were you just sort of talking about like jokes in general?
We sort of just went over different things, I think, during the show. And then we're just naturally helping each other with tags and stuff.
Oh, that's the best.
I know. It felt really nice to just be able to talk about jokes.
So are there other shows that you have coming up or where, you know, like where can people see you as the touring, you know, begins to open up more?
Well, I'm going to be at Good Nights, the 8th to the 10th.
Yeah.
And then I'll be in Seattle at Laugh Seattle.
Yeah.
And then I'll be in Iowa at the Des Moines Funny Bone.
Cool.
And I think that's it for now.
What's your ideal touring schedule? Would you, are you someone who wants to tour like, you know, 45 weeks out of the year, or do you like to have it a little more in moderation?
I think I go through phases. Like when I'm, I don't know if you feel this, but like when I'm on the road, I'm like, I can't wait to get home. And then when I'm home, I can't wait to get on the road. Right. So I'm just, I'm like never satisfied.
Do you think that's necessary? Like in the sort of, in your pursuit of psychology, do you feel like a certain amount of dissatisfaction is necessary to kind of keep us motivated?
Yeah, probably. You kind of have that, you need a little angst, I think.
Right.
To keep doing it. Because it isn't, I mean, it's not an easy job, you know? It's not like a normal thing to want to do.
Right. But I also wonder, like, is comfort the enemy of art? Like, do we, are we creative because we're dissatisfied in some way, or we're like, we feel uncomfortable, or we're trying.
Have you ever read, by the way, I was just talking to somebody else about this book. Have you read A Gentleman in Moscow?
No.
By Amor Tolles. I don't know how to pronounce anything right now. Like Amor Tolles, Bad Moscow. It's Moscow, right? Like you're, it's not Moscow.
I mean, I don't know. I've always said Moscow, but you know, I grew up in the South and sometimes like Southern pronunciation.
Wait, where did you grow up again?
Primarily Tennessee. But,
oh, cool.
But we moved, my family, my mom and stepdad and I moved to California when I was in high school. So I've been here for a considerable amount of time. But I still feel like, but I have Southern roots.
Right. Okay. Anyway, it's a great book, A Gentleman in Moscow or Moscow. because there's a great, the reason I thought of it is there's a great passage about like, you know, how he used to live this high life of convenience and everything was handed to him on a silver platter. And then there's a great line where he's like, but like the inconveniences are what mattered most to me. And I don't know. I just always think of that. I always think of that passage, like whenever things are really difficult, where you're just like, actually, that's where a lot of the good stuff is.
Yeah. I mean, that's such a great point that you bring up, because it is like, that's where growth happens. That's where like creativity can happen. And, you know, I always sort of make the comparison with like, you know, someone can make a $200 million movie and it's not great. And someone can make a $2 million movie and it's brilliant. And they're like, the $200 million movie often can almost suffer from infinite resource, where it's like, well, they didn't necessarily have certain obstacles that they had to think around. So they just kind of threw money at it. And that doesn't always, you know, but having those obstacles are the things that kind of inspired creativity, that they created necessity to figure out, like to problem solve.
Yeah, I definitely think that's true. I think that's often why, like, you know, comics like Chappelle still go out to the, you know, he still goes out to these clubs and just workshop stuff with comics who are, you know, still doing the grind and everything. He's like, I got to be with the people doing the grind.
Yeah. And, I mean, you know, it definitely, there just isn't any other energy that's like it. There's just nothing. There is literally nothing else that you could compare it to. There's nothing else that can substitute for it. And it's just getting a group of people in a room, you know, telling them some jokes, having fun for 90 minutes, and then you leave, they leave, and then you start it all over again. There's just nothing else that really feels quite like that.
Yeah, that's why, I mean, I guess that gives me hope that it's never going to completely die.
Oh, know? Comedy? No, yeah. I don't, it won't. People need it, and people still appreciate it, and especially now, like, you know, I think we've realized that these kind of communal experiences are really, you know, necessary. I mean, I don't think people are going to maybe go back into offices in a lot of cases for quite a long time, but certain communal experiences, I think, are really needed to kind of like to connect, you know, like it's,
Yeah, it's the connection that I crave for sure with that. And you don't get that online.
No. No, because I think it's like a good substitute. It's sort of like a protein bar versus like, oh, you actually ate a meal, you know, like because it satisfies a little bit of the connection. But I still think your brain processes it in a different way than when you are in a room breathing the same air, you know, looking at people's faces. And, you know, like we didn't evolve to look at a weird moving two-dimensional representation of things. We evolved to be communal, I think. I don't know.
Yeah. And there's something kind of, especially like during this time, it felt kind of, I don't know, sort of, it just felt peaceful. Like, oh, everyone's freaking out online all the time. And then you see people in real life and everyone's like, oh, we're okay. You know, like, like everyone's doing okay.
Have you been in a situation yet where you're in the club and then like someone coughs in the room and everyone just kind of turns slowly? I feel like I have a weird fear about that I want to be in a club and someone's going to go, and then everyone's going to be like, like, has that happened?
Oh yeah, that's true. Actually, I haven't even noticed that.
Oh, good. Okay, good.
Yeah, I haven't noticed that.
Good, good, good. Good.
Yeah. No coughing.
Okay, good. Yeah, I'm still, I feel like it's good. There's going to be a readjustment period, you know, to really kind of get comfortable with it again. I don't know quite know what to expect.
Are you like, do you have a goal as far as timeline goes?
No, you know, my wife and I, like I said, we're taking it slowly. And I guess if I were to take a stab at it, like maybe the fall, like if everything keeps moving along in a positive direction, you know, then I would say the fall seems like a likely, and I know that, you know, there are places I could go before, but I just feel like I may not be emotionally ready. And also I don't think my new set's going to be ready by then anyway. So yeah, I don't know, that's kind of part of it too.
I don't even know, when you said the fall, I was like, what are we in right now? Like, oh, we're in the spring. I guess we're in the spring.
It's already April. This is crazy.
This is crazy.
Yeah, it's just moving so fast, and I just wonder.
Have you spent a lot of time outside during this time?
Yes, because we coincidentally got a dog a month before quarantine. We got a puppy a month before quarantine, and
smart.
You know, Lydia said it was the best thing that could have happened, because otherwise, like, he's the thing that gets us out of the house. We go on walks. Those walks are wonderful. They get us outside. It's like, I don't think we would have thought to just walk around the neighborhood without a dog. So that's been good.
What kind of dog is it?
Oh, he's called an otterhound. It's like a giant, sort of like a cousin of an Irish wolfhound. So he's a big, he's like 120-pound dog.
And, whoa.
He sort of looks like a big sheepdog. They're very sweet tempered. He's a sweet dog, but you know, a big
dog.
That's
great that you have a dog now.
Yeah. Have you been getting outside? Well, you've been traveling, so you have been going out.
Yeah, but I got much more into hiking. I never was like a big hiker before. And then now I really need to be with nature more. So that's been really nice.
That's good. And do you feel like, you know, when we're young, it's so easy to kind of take the piss out of people, be like, oh, what are you hiking? What are you meditating? What are you doing yoga for? Whatever. And you start to get older and your head just feels like this jumbled mess. And then you start doing that shit and you feel better. And you're like, God damn it.
Yeah,
why.
It really does work.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, the cliches work. It's so annoying.
Are you connecting with nature? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I am. Okay. Because it's going to get you out of your fucking head.
Yeah. I know. And it's right there. And we live in LA, so we don't really have an excuse, you know? It's like right there.
I know. And we're so weather spoiled, you know?
I saw a deer at Griffith Park.
Oh, that's great.
And I was walking alone and it was like early-ish, but it had just rained. So no one was out.
Yeah.
And there was just this deer just standing there, like in the middle of the path.
That, Erica, that was your spirit deer. You know, I don't want to.
I thought so. I thought so.
That deer is your Patronus. Now, like, whenever you're up against something, you're just going to be able to cast a deer. It's just going to be a deer.
Yes.
How fucking rad would that be?
It was very magical.
If you were being heckled and then all of a sudden a fucking deer just appeared and like stomped on a guy, like how much fun would that be?
That's so imaginative. Like, I feel like that's some surreal, you know, what's his name? David
Lynch. No, I'm just stealing from Harry Potter. It's just Harry Potter.
Oh.
No, it was someone else's imagination. I just was borrowing.
I thought it was more sophisticated than that.
No. I'm just, I was just referring to a young adult book series.
My niece and nephew love Harry Potter.
Yeah, I should say adult book series. You know what? Adult.
Young adult.
We were adults. We're adults. It's fine. You know, as we're wrapping this up, is there anything else you want to plug? Levian Rhodes is, when is it actually, Comedy Dynamics is putting it out. When does it actually drop?
April 13th.
April 13th. Fantastic. I think it's so cool that you did this. And
thanks.
No, it's just been, it's always great. Like, I love, like, you know, meeting funny people and then watching how they flourish and how they kind of have their own paths and stuff. And so, you know, it was real pleasure to have you on the show. And
likewise, it's nice to actually talk to you, because even though I did at midnight, we never really got to chat. So it's nice to get to talk.
So insane. I mean, when I think about doing that show 4 days a week, because it aired the same day, just the turnover rate is it was insane. Like, when some people say, do you miss that midnight? I go, I miss it, but I don't miss the schedule, because you just can never even sit down for a second. It's just go, nonstop.
Yeah, it was insane. And you had to talk the entire time. Like, you didn't get any breaks during the actual show.
No. And I was also like recording podcasts at lunch breaks and a lot of times after the shows. And
oh my gosh.
You know, and you know,
I'm surprised you weren't more cranky. You were always very nice.
Well, I loved what I was doing, but I'm sure, I had those days where I was just like, I think I need a break. I think I need to take time off. And it's interesting to hear you talk about like hiking and getting out there and breathing and all that stuff, because we really do kind of romanticize this idea that it's a good thing to work yourself into the ground. And again, maybe it's a getting older thing, or maybe it's a perspective from the last year, but I sort of feel like I don't, to your earlier point about how fame and all that stuff, it just doesn't last. It's like, shouldn't you, you kind of should enjoy and be, you know, like you shouldn't grind yourself into a nub. Like, you should really kind of find the balance. Do you, are you good at that?
Well, no, but I've been really working on it, you know, because I just don't think it's sustainable to act like that, to put your profession as the main thing at the expense of your whole being.
Yeah, because you don't have any control over how the business goes. You don't have any control over whether you're going to get a part, whether someone's going to buy a pitch, you know, how many people are going to show up, how many. And so, you know, what advice do you have for people, in what ways to not start to place their value in these kinds of external things that can really hurt them if they're not careful, because they, you know, it's like, you have to find that internal value. How would you advise people about that?
Well, I've been doing a lot of work on this, and like, I think a lot of it is, I didn't understand what liking myself meant for a long time. You know, when people are like, you have to love yourself.
Right.
You have to like yourself. I think before I thought it was like, well, I love myself if I get this,
right,
or I love myself if this person likes me, you know? So now it's more like, oh, I've got these weird traits, or I've got this thing about me, and like, I like that about myself. I like this. And I'm much more accepting of who I really am than who I thought I was.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, cause I, like, I'm kind of a loner. I like a lot of alone time, but I used to force myself to hang out with people all the time. Cause I thought, well, I should want to be around people.
Right.
But now that I'm like, oh no, actually I like being alone, but then I'm also okay with that.
Right.
Then it's like, oh, then it's like, I can just be alone and be okay with it. Whereas before it's like, well, I like it, but I shouldn't like it.
Right. I do think that comes out of that period of time when you're in your 20s, though, and you're trying to figure out, like, where do I fit in? Where, you know, like, where you're just kind of friends with everybody because you're like, you know, and then you start getting older. You're like, well, who am I and what types of experiences do I want to have and who do I really connect with and what's important to me, you know? And I think some of that's just a, because when you're young, you just, when you're like a teenager and you're in your 20s, you are just trying to fit yourself into things rather than like
right.
just being yourself and kind of letting things come to you that work for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And also just, yeah, I think it's good to take breaks. Like, I think what you're doing is great because you're, you know, I mean, obviously a lot of people have been doing it, but I think even if there wasn't a pandemic, it would be good to take breaks.
But I just don't feel, I just haven't felt inspired to write a ton. I, you know, like I would, it'd be nice to say like, oh, it was a real conscious decision, but I just, I'll kind of like, I'll make a couple notes here and there, but I just, and then I go, I don't know, you know, and then, but I just don't feel motivated to like write. So I, so
but that, how do you feel in general? Like, do you feel pretty good about things in general?
Yeah, I feel, well, I mean, you know, besides the sort of horrifying state of the world, I do feel like, I will say that the one positive, you know, well, the many positive things is that I've gotten to spend all this great time with my wife that I never would have, we both would have been running off all over to the four corners of the world doing work or doing whatever. And so that's been amazing. Like, I don't really want to go back to the other way because I love spending time with her and the dog, it's like, I like the dog, you know, like we'll walk the dog. And that's fun. And so, you know, the space feels good. Like instead of work, I got to cram in a little space to just like rest for a day. It's like, no, I don't know. I kind of, the space feels good. I don't feel like, what am I know I'm forgetting something or God, I don't want to fuck up this thing. Or I hope people like this, or I hope this is funny, or I hope this is, you know, that constant nagging stress that just runs at all the time when you think like, you know, I want to be successful. And then, but then what comes with that is it can be just that feeling in your chest all the time. Like someone's just pushing on your sternum nonstop.
Right. It sounds like you're kind of like content.
Yeah. And I do want, and that does scare me a little bit because I'm like, what if I'm so content that I'm like, I don't need to travel anymore to do stand up. I like it, but I don't like, I am worried a little bit that like, oh, I wonder if I can get back into that mode of
but touring. Maybe it's just an adjustment of like how much you need to do it. Like maybe you don't need to do it every weekend or maybe, you know, like maybe balance is good.
Maybe, but I love your advice about just sort of finding, like sort of picking those things that you like about yourself or you're content with about yourself so that, because then that really sort of takes the focus on having to do a thing, you know, like, and I think part of it is the, you know, would you say that there's some truth in the wanting to do something, but not needing to do it emotionally?
Yeah. Like if, yeah, you think you want or thinking you want to do something versus actually wanting to do it.
I just mean like the wanting, like, hey, I want to perform because it's fun. Not like I need to perform because I need people to show up and I need to be liked and I need that, you know, it's like the wanting something and enjoying it for its own purposes rather than like that.
No, I think that's way healthier. Like I'm trying to get to that place. I don't think I'm there yet because I think I still have that need factor.
Right.
But I think once you do it for the wanting to do it, you'll probably like come up with all this new material just because you're not forcing it so much.
Right. Last question. Are you someone who writes every day or do you kind of make yourself write or do you just sort of like as you're inspired to write?
I sort of write just as I'm inspired to write, but I do write. I do a lot of free writing.
Uh-huh.
So if I feel stuck, I'll just do like some kind of free write thing.
Were there any kind of, I said last question before, but now I guess this one. Were there any tools that you were able to pull from conservatory or to pull from, you know, from acting conservatory or from music school, or like, is there like sort of interdisciplinary tools that you've pulled in stand-up?
I think all of those disciplines require just doing it and doing it and doing it. And so I think I probably wouldn't have stuck with stand-up as long as I had, you know, in the beginning, because I was really bad in the beginning, you know, had I not come from other arts, because I really, you know, with cello, you just pick up the cello every day and you practice every day and you don't miss days. And then stand-up, it's kind of the same. Like you get up, whether you feel like it or not, and you just kind of grind it out. And so I think it's the repetitive nature of all those arts kind of lends itself well.
Do you have any musical advice for this sort of, because cello is incredible, technical proficiency is required to play cello, as is guitar, as is any instrument, but guitar really, it's that same kind of stringed instrument. What do you do when you're trying to get something and you feel like, I have been trying and trying and trying to get this run on a piece, it's just not getting into my fingers, I don't know. Do you step away or do you push through it?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think you step away for a bit.
Okay.
You know, unless you have a deadline, like unless you have to learn it by the next day, I think you take a break and then you go back.
No one is requiring me to do anything on guitar, so I feel...
Do you have a big thing coming up?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have that guitar recital where I'm just going to go stand out.
Wait, did you say you play a little piano?
Yes, but I play more piano. I play guitar because I can bring a guitar to stand-up clubs and I can't bring a piano. But if I had my choice, I would probably play piano, I think, because I play.
Well, if you're feeling stuck, why don't you just go to the other instrument, take a break and play the other thing for a bit?
And be like, I can do this one. And then sort of, yeah.
Yeah, get your confidence back up and then go over to the other one.
Because I'm not great at either one. So it can be a little bit.
Yeah, just go back and forth.
A little frustration pong, like just back and forth. Oh, okay. Oh. I don't know. Well, I really can't tell you how much I appreciate this. Thank you so much for doing the podcast. And I really wish you the best this year. And I hope, you know, I hope that it becomes safer and clubs fill up and then, you know, you can have that giant, you know, room experience again, you know, in no time. I feel like we're close, right? Or are some cities still just doing that anyway?
I bet we're going to start opening clubs here. Is that what you meant?
Well, not just LA, but I just mean like, are there cities where clubs are just full now? Or are you saying that they're all at like 25% capacity?
Well, Wise Guys is more than 20. I think Wise Guys is maybe 60% or something.
Okay. Okay. I feel like that would be good from the standpoint of like, I wouldn't have to feel responsible for not filling the room. I'd be like, it's just the rules. Like,
that's what I've been feeling. That's I'm like, I wish I could say it's really different, but this is exactly how it's been.
Probably would have sold this out, but you know, protocols and shit. So 60%.
I just go and I say, this is a sold out show. Who knew you just had to sell fewer tickets?
And, that's right.
And I can sell out any venue.
Hey, listen, that's all that matters. Like you get to reward yourself with the, I totally sold out. I mean, by the way, totally flying in the face of all the healthy discussion we had before about don't let things define you. Don't wear.
Right.
Okay, I fucking sold out. You know, I fucking sold out this room. I'm good.
I didn't say I've arrived yet with being healthy.
I'm right there with you. I totally feel the same. But thank you so much for being here, Erica Rhodes. It was so wonderful chatting with you, and I really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thank you, and thanks for getting me started on At Midnight.
Oh, you know, absolutely. And Maybe there's another panel show at some point in the future, and you will absolutely be invited back on that one.
Aw, thanks.
All right, take care, Erica.
All right, you too. Bye, Chris.
Bye.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.